This is Hannelore Gabriel interviewing Ted Argus, and we are doing the interview at his home on 618 G Street.
No.
So I will start asking you questions now, and thank you for agreeing to do this interview. And it's today, June 23rd, 2003. No, 24th. Close enough. Where did your parents come from?
My father originally came from Greece, and my mother was born in Leadville, Colorado.
Mm-hmm. And what was your father's full name?
Theodore A. Margus.
Argus? Is that a shortened form, or since you said it,
Shortened. It used to be Argyropoulos, but when they migrated to this country, they shortened it to Argus.
Yeah. Could we spell that original spelling of that name?
Sure. Argyropoulos.
Okay. What?
You'll have to talk a little louder. My hearing aids.
Yes. Okay.
I can hear you pretty good. But
what year was that when your father came from Greece to the United States?
I would say he came roughly here I'd say about 1905.
And you know why he came here?
Well, he had two brothers living here. The older brother came first, Uncle Dick. And when he accumulated enough money, he sent for Uncle Gus to come over. And then when they got enough money accumulated, they sent for Dad. There was nothing back in Greece for them, so they came back here. Uncle Dick had a grocery store and an interest in a garage.
Where was that? In Salida?
Well, to describe it, the garage originally was in the alley between 2nd Avenue and 1st Street.
Mm-hmm.
Little shack there, automotive stuff. Later on in life, he took over the Nash International franchise. And Uncle Gus went in with him as a mechanic, and Dad went into the grocery business.
Mm-hmm. So what year was that when your uncles had this garage?
Well, you know, that's something I don't know because I wasn't there, but I'd say they probably started the garage business in 35.
Mm-hmm. And how old was your dad then?
Probably 25, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
Just a kid.
And you said your mother is from Leadville?
Excuse me?
Your mother came from Leadville.
Leadville.
Yes.
And lived in Smelter, Colorado, Smelter Town, out here by the smokestack.
Mm-hmm.
And they got married, I don't know when exactly. I was born April the 6th, 1921. In 1924, my brother George was born, April the 3rd. And they lived on 237 Sackett Avenue. And they lived there till they both passed away. Well, I should change that. They both ended up in the convalescent home. Dad was about 100 years old, Mom was 80-something, and they got to the point we couldn't handle them, so we put them in a convalescent home out here to finish their life out. Dad was, I think Dad up to 95 years old, was just as agile as any person you would ever see. He walked every day, very, very seldom drove a car, knew everybody in town, and he was had a good personality, associated, didn't know a stranger. And he done well in the grocery business. And after I graduated from school in 1938, I went to business with him. And I stayed there for 18 years. And then Uncle Sam gave me a notice to participate in the festivities.
Well, let's go back to those earlier years.
Oh.
Tell me a little bit more about your mother.
Well, Mom was a homebody. The only work she ever done except homework was she help in the grocery store quite a bit.
And in her family, she was born in Leadville, right? Was her family living in Leadville?
No, grandma moved to Salida. And then they had, four boys and two girls. And I think, to my best of my knowledge, they're all deceased now. They'd be 90 or 100 years old. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard from them for a long time, so I don't know.
And what kind of endeavor were they into? What was your mother's family's business?
They were, everyone worked someplace else. Stanley was a clerk. Uncle Frank was a railroader. Victor was a painter. Aunt Josephine was a housewife, and Aunt Edith was a housewife. I missed a brother, Tony. Tony died at an early age. But they had a good family life. As a matter of fact, I'll go back a little further. Families in them days were very close. Christmas and all the holidays, we all got together. Sometimes there'd be 30, 35 of us, all going to grandma's house for dinner, having a good time, enjoying life. It was a good, close, knit, very knit family, very close.
Mm-hmm. And what was your mother's maiden name?
What the heck was her name? Glovan, Aunt Mary Glovan, G-L-O-V-A-N.
Mm-hmm. And do you know what ethnic background that name belongs to?
No, Mom's background I don't know too much. All I know is when she moved from Leadville and got married, that's while living with Dad, raising a family and keeping busy. Excellent cook. She could cook anything better than anybody I ever knew. I miss her a lot today. And Dad was a good cook, too.
What did he like to cook?
He loved to cook.
What did he like to cook?
Greek stuff.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything?
And Mom, she could cook anything you wanted. She was exceptionally good cook. Any nationality, spaghetti and the Italians or Slovenian stuff, or I can't just tell you, just anything. She is very efficient at cooking.
Was there anything that your family raised? Did your mom have a vegetable garden, for example?
Dad had an exceptionally nice garden every year.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing Dad always said, Dad never used commercial fertilizer. He always used cow manure. Had the prettiest lawn you ever seen, just velvety. You could stand on it and it would just sink. I never seen a lawn like it. And Mom didn't do much of that. She done the cooking, Dad done the gardening and working in the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. And did they also do any hunting? Or did you have maybe chickens or some
well,
meat
Dad,
source
Dad,
of your
Dad
own?
Dad did raise chickens, and that was one of the funny parts of my life. Every Saturday or Friday night, I'd have to go out and get a snare and snare one of the chickens, chop the neck off and gut it and feather it and all that to get it ready for dinner. But it wasn't that bad. I just hate to see the poor bird die, but we had to eat. Things in them days were rough. This was there right around.
Rough in what way?
Depression, shortage of money.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the depression very well because food was scarce. And even with the grocery store, you can't buy groceries if people don't pay their grocery bill. And his business was founded on credit. He trusted everybody. But he didn't do bad. I mean, people were pretty good with him. Very honest. No complaints.
Mm-hmm. But during the Depression years, that was a problem with credits?
No, you know, the funny part of the thing is, and a lot of the old friends from back east used to come out here to Colorado to visit during the Depression. They had money, and they would marvel at the way that the people in this town lived. They didn't have any worries. They just all enjoyed life, and they all worked hard. Everybody was everybody's friend. It's different today. Nobody knows anybody.
Why do you think that was?
Excuse me?
Why do you think that was?
I think it's the way they were brought up at home. They learned to appreciate what they got and had.
Mm-hmm.
Because they struggled for, I mean, Dad worked hard all his life for, well, he got out of the grocery store after about 60 years, so.
So what kind of a guy was he?
Fantastic. Stubborn, bullheaded, but when he said eat, you sit down at the table, you eat what you was had on the plate, or you didn't leave the table. You ate slow, you didn't eat fast, you didn't get to run out of the house to go to the show or go anywhere till the plate was clean. I mean, he was very, very good father. Very, well, I raised my kids the same way, so they turned out pretty good. And, let's see. Well, I had, at one time I had, I was raised down in the, well, I was raised down by the lower park there. And there was about 10 or 15 of us kids. And we amused ourselves. We'd go hiking every Saturday. We'd take a lunch and go back up in the hills here and just piddle around all day, spend the whole day, take our apple and our sandwiches and water and get up there. And after a while, we'd all sit down and eat, do a little more walking, and then come back home. We never got in trouble like they do today. There was no, we had to do what we wanted. We had no other enjoyment. We didn't have cars. Bicycles are a rarity. Roller skates are unheard of, I don't think. No skateboards, no nothing. We had to make do. We all learned to swim in the Arkansas River down here. The funny part of the whole story is where we learned to swim was behind the hospital. And in them days, when they done surgery there, everything came into the sewer and went in right behind the hospital. A lot of times somebody would dive in there and come up with an arm or something, they'd discard it. It was interesting. But we never had money. We just
with an arm, what do you mean? An actual human arm?
Oh, yeah. They'd throw the stuff in the grater, the which call it there, and if it didn't chew it up, well, it'd just go down the river. Them were different days.
And you also found things like, I don't know, scalpels and what?
No, none of that. No
just scalpels. Arms.
No equipment or nothing like
that. Yeah. Did you have any toys?
Any what?
Toys?
No, toys in them days were scarce. I remember one particular toy I always remembered. One Christmas we went to Grandma's, the day before Christmas to spend the evening night with Grandma. And that morning they bought me a little fire engine about that long. And that was my cherished toy for years because that was the finest toy I ever got.
How old were you then?
Probably 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking me to go back a long ways, but you can scratch that off. And like I said, we all learned to swim in the river, all 15 of us. We had down, if you go down at the big park, there's an old tree right down at the bottom of the park. There's hanging out over the, unless they tore it up since I've been down there last. And we had a big rope and got a tire, and we'd make a swing out there, drop into the water, swim back in. That's what we learned. We had one guy who was a pretty good swimmer. He was an older fellow, but sort of our guardian angel. But nobody ever had any. We enjoyed life. We played baseball in the park down there. We never had a baseball park. None of the frivolities they have today. If we wanted to go play baseball, we went out there where the park is today. We'd have to take our wheelbarrows and our rakes and our shovels, and we'd have to rake that whole place up and dump the rocks over the hill on the river edge there. So we would have a place to park. I mean, nothing was given to us. We earned it. Then down by the river, there was a lettuce shed. They raised a lot of lettuce in Salida years ago. Big, and they shipped a lot of lettuce out. Well, the greatest thing we had to do, we'd go down to the lettuce shed in the evening, and all the culls that they didn't crate up, well, we'd pick them up and take them and go door to door making money to go to the show.
So that group of kids, are there any of them still around that you're in contact with?
Every one of my buddies are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Except my brother George, he's still here.
He lives in town?
Yes. George was a plumber, been plumbing for, he's self-employed. He's been probably 30, 35 years a plumber. Just now he's semi-retired. The old customers called him up, and he's glad to accommodate him because they took care of him when he was having the go at it, so he appreciated that.
So where did you go to school?
The grade school was McCray School. That was down where the post office is now. Junior highs were Kessler Junior High for the 7th and 8th grade in Salida High School from then on. Mm-hmm. Graduated from Salida in 38.
So at grade school, how many kids were there in your class?
Oh, probably 35, 40. You know, we never knew. They had to take what they got. They didn't have any room. Sometimes they'd have to bring a chair or two in for the kid to sit down in because the classes weren't big enough. But we all managed. Some failed, some went ahead, some went back.
Do you remember any of the teachers?
Oh, my favorite teacher was Mrs. Mitchell. She was my Spanish teacher, a wonderful teacher. And she always talking Spanish, so you had no choice. She'd get in the class and she'd say, buenos dias, señora. And it just kept on. All the class was conducted in Spanish. And you learned, you had no choice. And Mrs. Holtorf, she was a math partial math teacher, and she did clock watcher. She done a very good job teaching math. Mrs. Holtorf, Mrs. Hoddle, she was the principal. Oh golly, you're bringing going to go back a long ways. Who's my Mrs. Rogers was the English teacher. Mrs. Mosgrove was a junior high English teacher. You know, I hated school. Well, my problem was...
Why did you hate school?
I started when I was 5 years old. Theoretically, I was a year behind the rest of them in knowledge. Because I couldn't keep up with them. And I had a heck of a time trying to keep up with guys that were... If I was five, they were six and seven. Some of them were 8 or 9. Farmer, the boys come in and finally get to come to school. They'd be 8 or 9 years old. And their mentality is a little, you know, than a five-year-old kid. There's a lot of difference.
Why were these kids coming in at a later age?
Working on the farms and stuff, and they didn't get to come to school. The farm come first with the farmers out there, you know. They had to get their crops in.
These were kids not from Salida?
Oh, all this is all the surrounding area, not Buena Vista. Maysville and Poncho and... All around. Mm-hmm. All around.
How did they get here?
A lot of them walked. Some of them walked 3, 4, 5 miles a day to school. And after school, they go back. When I went to junior high school and in high school, we lived out at the park, so that was almost a mile every day. Go to school, run home for lunch, run back to school. Then that evening, we'd go home and go to work helping Dad in the grocery store, sacking potatoes and putting sugar up in 5-pound sacks and putting beans up in 2-pound sacks. And it was interesting. After I think about it, after, you know, we worked hard. Never got nothing. We used to go to school, one of the worst things we ever done. We didn't have money. None of the kids had money. A lot of Spanish families. And so we'd all get together and chip in our money, and a couple of them, we'd pay the boys' ways into the show. And there was a big curtain where the exit was in the back of the show. So the boys would sneak, go in, sneak through the curtain and open the back door. We'd all go in for nothing. We finally got caught.
Show, you mean movies?
Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Cinema.
Yeah, okay.
Uh-huh. And technically, though, we all done good. One thing we done one time, we got an idea. We took a rim off of a bicycle, and we took an inner tube and stretched it over there, and we put sticks in it like a bow and arrow, you know. And one day we shot it, and it went over in the Palace Hotel window. Clear from that end of the park, it went that far. Boy, we never heard the last of that.
Good shot.
Yeah, good shot. I'll say it was a good shot. It was a long shot.
What other mischief were you into?
We had no toys to play with. Toys were just unheard of. If you wanted entertainment, you went out and got your own. Every summer we'd be playing ball, like I said, all the time. In the winter we'd play football down in the lower park down here, Riverside Park. And we had a Catholic school up there, and the Catholic boys would get together and they'd come down every Saturday, and we'd have inter-squad football. I mean, it was entertainment. We had to do it. We're going nuts. I don't know which. Nuttier. But life was good. I can't complain. I had a good life.
So do you feel you got a good education in the Salida schools then or not?
Well, my education, like I said, was high school. When I got out, Dad didn't have the money to send me to college. He was struggling as it was, and I says, no. So I, let's see, 38. Yeah, it was 1942, 4 years later when I went into service. So for 4 years, I lived at home, and I didn't have nothing to do. Play, work, and build a show. We used to ride the bicycle down to Wellsville. They used to have a swimming pool down at Wellsville. A beautiful swimming pool, dance hall down there. We used to go on Saturday nights when we got a little older, go down there and dance. But we ride the bicycle clear down to Wellsville, 5 miles. Get our swim. After the swim, ride the bicycle home.
During the Depression, you said it was hard. During the Depression, but were there people coming from other areas?
No, I don't think there was that. The only transits we had was on the railroad. Bums. We called them hobos. But there's a lot of them come on the trains, and they'd come up there to the grocery store for a bologna sandwich or something, maybe have a nickel or a dime. Poor old Dad, oh, here, take the bread, and I'll give you the bologna or something. And Dad was very generous. I don't know how many of them guys he fed over the years. But there was
How many of them were there, let's say, per week? Or?
Oh, I'd say probably in a week's time, 50 or 60. Some of them had money, some of them didn't have. Some were riding the rails because they didn't have the money for the railroad fare. Another thing I remember during the Depression, of course we had the coal chutes down here, see, and they brought the coal in from Gunnison on the narrow gauge, and they take it and separate it down here, and then they put it on the standard gauge. Well, they dropped lots and lots of coal all around through there. So in the evening, we take our little wagons and a gunny sack, and we go down there and take all the coal and pick it up and take it home. Never got in any trouble. We didn't steal it. They didn't care. They knew we were all good kids. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, about that same time, we used to take our wagons and go up to these hills. There was a lot of trees up there then times. And we'd go up there, chop down a bunch of trees, and bring home kindling for firewood and stuff. Always kept busy. A lot of trouble, I think. But we never really got into any bad trouble. The only one trouble we got, one of the Spanish boys, Phil Lucero, one time where he... my public, to be continued. Hello? Hello? Yeah? Who? Hospital? For what?
Okay.
Well, anyway, this Spanish boy found out they had a fan, the exhaust fan, in the bottom of the bakery. Right where the bakery is today, they had a big exhaust fan to take the... So he found out if he prop a stick there, he could crawl through the into the place, and he was taking candy. And he'd come down the next day at the park, and he'd give us all candy. Where's this candy coming from? Oh, a friend of mine gave it to me. Well, we all was skeptical. So one day, here come the cops to the grocery store. You know, Phil Lucero, he's my neighbor. Has he been giving you candy? Yeah. Where did it come from? I don't know. So the baker, he was a pretty good old guy, though. He felt sorry for my dad. Was the only one working out of the whole family, was making any money at all. So Dad says, well, I'll try to pay it. He says, but I can't do it all at once. So the baker says, no. He says, I'm just going to scare them. I'll just tell them you had to pay it. And if they ever come and do it again, they go to jail. Well, we did get in trouble one time. There was a bunch of railroad passenger train cars sitting right along the river out on the railroad there. And this stupid kid goes down with a slingshot, and he's breaking windows. And we had just gotten there. Same Lucero. And here come the cops. And he grabbed us all, called my dad up. We got your son in jail. What is he in jail for? Well, we don't know. He's all right. Don't worry about him. He's not in any trouble. Well, we had to tell Phil Dunnett. So we was going back in the paddy wagon to the jail. They was going to give us a good stern lecture, you know. And so anyway, the kid had the slingshot in his pocket, so he stuck it under the seat of the paddy wagon, and they searched us. They couldn't find it. It's probably still in this paddy wagon. It's probably junk someplace. But, oh, man, but he scared the living daylights out of us. He never went back again, and we told him, we don't have nothing to do with you if you're going to steal. We've been coming pretty close, but let's just cool it. So that was life. We all grew up. After we graduated, we seemed like we all just... matter of fact, the kid's mother died the other day. That's 99 years old. One of her boys I used to chum around with. But, you know, life is a funny thing. You grow up with kids like my graduating class until we had our first 25th anniversary. We didn't know where anybody was. But we had a wonderful, wonderful reception. I mean, response was fabulous. We had a party you couldn't believe.
So everybody came from somewhere else?
Everybody.
Were you the only one who was left from Salida?
Oh, yeah, we had quite a few from Salida. Mm. One from Alaska, California, Nevada, Texas, a couple. I don't remember all the 48 states, but that's all right.
So how many hours a day would you work in the grocery store?
From 8 till 6. 6 days a week.
That was after high school?
Yes.
Yeah, but while you were in school, did you work?
No, I went down there and sacked potatoes and stuff like
that. Yeah.
Potatoes come in 100-pound bags.
But would you do that every day you worked in the grocery store?
If they were out, we had to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Keep the supply for the demand. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of memories, you know, but I could go through all day and night, and you'd get bored and go home and say, I'll be back after supper. But it was a good life. It was a clean life. We existed. We didn't make any money. So keep on going there.
So, and you were still living at on Sackett?
Sackett.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was living with the folks.
Yeah. And so after high school, then after you worked in the, how many years did you work in the store?
4 after I graduated. Mm-hmm. Then Uncle Sam took me. I mm-hmm. got one of his announcements, and I was drafted into the service. I spent 3.5 years, a little over 3.5 years in the service.
What were you doing specifically?
Oh, you name it, I've done it, I'll tell you. The funny part of the whole story is here, when I was working in Camp Carson, I volunteered on a cadre coming out of Fort Logan. We were already processed, and we were heading for Texas on the train. So we got pretty close to Colorado Springs, and the sergeant come through, and he says, I need a couple of volunteers for a little job. So it was another guy from Salida and me were sitting together, and I said, let's volunteer. So we raised our hands. He says, okay, get your luggage. Get ready to get off in Colorado Springs. Well, that was a nice thing for a long time. Because we both went to the hospital. We helped build that hospital down there. I was a bedpan commando for years, if you know what they are, cleaning the messes. So anyway, Jack, he was a jack of all trades. He stayed there 42 years in Camp Carson, 19 and a half years I had to go overseas. The sad part of it is, my papers, when I had my physical, it said right on there, and I didn't know it till later, not fit for overseas duty. And I still don't know why. I'm still alive. And I got happy. So when I got in there, and the sergeant was just a prince. I got along good with him because I was honest with him. So one day he comes, he says, how far do you live from me? He called me Nick the Greek. He never called me Ted. Nick the Greek, that's what he called me. My name was Ted. So he says, how far do you live from here? I said, about 95 miles. He says, would you like to go home once in a while? Sure, I've got a honey back there. I'd like to go home every weekend and see her. He says, okay, I'll make you this deal. You go home every weekend unless you're on charge of quarters. That means I have to take care of the book, the guys coming in and checking out the Saturday night. I says, okay. So every weekend I was home.
So what was your honey's name? Your honey's name?
Helen Rogers.
And where is she from?
Salida, local yokel. Yeah. That's another funny thing. When we were going to school, she just loathed me. She couldn't stand me. And I couldn't figure, what have I ever done to this girl? So after I graduated, there was a country club out there in Smullertown. It was a dance hall, beer only. So the Greek fella asked me, would you like to work Saturday nights? Well, boy, that was money. Sure. So I went out and I tended bar Saturday night. Am I up to 2 hours yet? I went, I tended bar. So one night she come over, she says, Ted, I know I don't like you. You know I don't like you, but I need a favor. I said, sure, what do you need? She says, would you take me home? She says, my sister and I come up with a couple of rowdies, and we're soldiers from Camp Hill. And she says, I don't want to have nothing to do with them, and I need a ride. Sure. So after I got off work, I took her home and took her out to a little restaurant on the highway, and there was a Greek fella running that place, and he started talking to me in Greek, and he says, oh, what a good-looking girl and all this and that. I knew it. She was a beautiful woman. And so I says, how about a date next week? She said, don't you have to work? I says, I'll take off to go out with you. So we start going there. We went together 2.5 years. Of course, part of it was in, went into the service at the time. So the sergeant come to me one day and he says, well, Ted, you can go get married if you're going to discharge us coming through. So I was all excited. So I called Mom up on the phone and I says, hey, we're going to get married Sunday. How come? She says, well, we're all ready and I'm going to be discharged. And she was all full of it. Boy, she was ready to get married. So I said, she says, okay. So Sunday night, while everybody was asleep, we snuck out the window. We was living with her mother at the time. We got out the window, took our little ditty bag, went to Canyon City, had a JP marry us. And it hit the ceiling when we got home. Her mother was glad. She loved me.
So how old were the two of you?
20. When did I get married? Oh, you have some silly questions. 20. I'd say roughly 23. She was a year or two younger. 2 years difference. But Mom liked me. She just adored me. And so we went and got married. We were on our honeymoon at the Broadmoor in Colorado Springs, and the telephone rings. It was my mother. She says, I don't know what's wrong. She says, you've got to get back to Camp Carson tomorrow. I said, now what? So I got back to Camp Carson, reported, and the next day, Sergeant, what's wrong? You took me off my honeymoon. He says, that ain't the worst of it. You're on your way overseas.
And when was this? Which year?
42.
Mm-hmm. In what month?
Let me think. We got married New Year's. I was on my way overseas in about 43, because I'd been in Camp Carson a little over a year. And I says, what happened, Sergeant? Oh, I cussed him out. I was so mad. He could have put me in the brig and I'd have still been there. I says, you told me to go home and get married. Didn't you? He says, Gus, somebody pull some strings. Somebody else, you're going in place of somebody else. So over I went, landed, and then got on the boat in England. You want to hear this? Got on the boat in England. We were in a convoy. We got out there quite a ways, and the U-boats chased us. Then we had a storm. They said it's the worst storm they'd ever had in the Atlantic Ocean in all the years. The waves were as high as tenderfoot, believe it or not. And we was in one of these little Henry J. boats, just enough to take 100 or 200 troops, cramped in there like sardines. I got so sick I couldn't keep nothing on my stomach. The sergeant had come up, it's all in your head. I said, well, Sarge, it ain't in my stomach, but it says, there's nothing left to come up. Well, we got on the way to England. We got chased all the way to Halifax, Nova Scotia. Fortunately, we got through, but we seen some of our boys sink out there. The U-boats, down they went. So we got to Halifax, and I says, the old lady two doors up the street from the folks was from Halifax, Nova Scotia, Grandma Kennedy. And he says, I wrote down a letter, and I says, oh, I'm in the prettiest little country you ever seen. I wish I could tell you where I am, but I can't do it. By the way, how is Grandma Kennedy doing? Well, boy, that old boy took right there. He ran over to Mrs. Kennedy. He says, "Where are you from?" She says, "Halifax, Nova Scotia." He says, "That's where Ted is." And that's where I was. He deduced it. So it took us 33 days from the time we left New York to get to England. In the interim, I got an infection in my ear. I was down for days, and I got to England. I was in the hospital for 10 days. I can't remember what they called it in there, but it was a big pus bag in there, and they'd pierce it, and then it'd come out. Then they'd pierce it and come out. So finally they got me in the hospital, and they got me down, and blah, blah, blah. Got me cured, so I got transferred here, and then I got transferred there, and I had to go here, and I had to go there. I volunteered for everything. I didn't want to go to the front lines. I couldn't go anyway. I don't know why, but I wasn't eligible for combat duty. And sometimes I was as close as I could see the cannons on the other side belching smoke. But I shouldn't have been over there. I should have been home with Mama. I give 2 best years of my life to to the Army. You had enough now? No. You want to shut me up?
So, would you say that was a bad experience or a good experience?
Well, after I got home, all right, it was a wonderful experience because I got over to Germany. I went through France, Luxembourg, Holland, and Germany. I got to Germany. I never knew a word of German. Not a word. And I had a kid was working with me, a German boy. His name was Ted, incidentally. And he was working in my outfit, and he was my dolmetscher. You know what that is? Interpreter? Okay. See? So anyway, he started teaching me German. With 6 months' time, I could interpret the German. Not when they were bringing the Nazis in, and I was cross-examining them all the time. And I got fluent. I could write in German, read it, and speak it just like that. But it's gone now.
And you said you also grew up speaking Greek?
Yeah, oh yeah, that was a language at home. The only
Did your mom learn it?
Slovenian. And I learned was the non-speakable quotes.
Slovenian, you say?
Huh?
She was...
Slovenian.
She spoke, your mom?
Yeah, her mother come from Yugoslavia.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
If you don't understand my English, you correct me, would you? So when I got over, I was pretty proud because I learned that language. And made lots of friends in Germany. I love them German people. I got along with the French. I just couldn't stand them. Never did like them. They still don't like them. You're not French, are you? So anyway, let's see, where else? Well, I went. I did see some beautiful country and had a lot of experiences. I could tell you one about some liquor if you want me to tell you about the colonel, but I don't think you'd want to hear that. It's interesting. Anyway, one day, Ted comes into me and he says, come, schnell, schnell. So we got out in the car and got my Jeep and he takes me way out in the country.
Go ahead.
We get to a bomb shelter, big cellar. We go downstairs and this thing is full of liquor. Schnapps, champagne, wine, anything that in a liquor department. Must have been about 3,000 bottles down there. So I told him, don't tell nobody. So one day, while the sergeant is delivering the mess to the officers, we didn't have mess. They had the stuff, we had the K&C. So I said, how's about a drink? Oh my God, he says, you know how long it's been? He's a colored boy, fastest guy in the world. I says, I got some good French schnapps here. You'd appreciate it. It's only two blow jolts and he was feeling no pain. Oh man, would I like to have some of this. I says, how many bottles you want at $5 a bottle? Just right out of a clear blue sky, see? And I got $50. I went down to the basement. I had some in the basement. So he bought them. Pretty soon he comes on the next trip and he brings me some good rations for the enlistment. We had 5 Danish people doing the cooking and housework. And this one old gal, she could cook anything. I mean, she was a fabulous cook. And the girls cleaned the houses and cleaned and done the ironing and washing. Wonderful people. So anyway, We stayed there a while, and then Sergeant kept checking. I get transferred. He followed me. I took the liquor with me, or I knew where the place was. So I never got too far from the cash. And one day he came in and he says, "I'm loaded. I got $100. No problem. I'll be back in an hour." So old Ted and I, we go out and we put 20 bottles in there and back to town. Catch him on a side street and give him that. So Christmas, Thanksgiving was coming. And he says, "What are you going to eat for Christmas, Thanksgiving?" I says, "Probably K rations or C rations or officers' leftovers." He says, "What do you want?" I says, "Really? What do you want? It's going to cost you." I says, "Hey, that's no problem." I says, "I want a turkey, cranberries, all the Thanksgiving stuff, and Coca-Cola." The officers had Coca-Cola, and we played hell to get any out of them. They just wouldn't give us any. There was a treat. So Thanksgiving, they didn't bring us any. But we had two cases in the basement. The old sergeant brought me two cases of Coke and all the stuff to eat. We had a Thanksgiving dinner, and it was funny. The next day I get a letter from my honey. "Oh, honey, we had such a wonderful dinner, blah, 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 blah. And I missed you, and I know you didn't have anything good to eat and enjoying good mama's good home cooking." I got homesick, but this gal was a good cook. She made me forget mom anyway. So this went on for about 6 months. In the interim, I'm running a courier run from Kassel. You been to Germany? From Kassel to Frankfurt. I got on the Autobahn. I drove that Autobahn every day, running courier, mail. And one day I went in there, and this lieutenant colonel was sitting there, and he says, "Where you from, son?" I says, "I'm from Colorado." "Well, how ironic. What city?" I says, "Salida." "You're kidding me. Do you know Mary Mito?" I says, "Yes." He says, "Well, she was my nurse back in the States in New York. And her husband was a grocer, just like Dad. Small town grocer." And blah, blah, blah. Got the acquainted. And he says, "Well, if you ever need anything..." I said, "Next time you come up to the castle, you let me know in advance, and I got a treat for you." I says, "Call me. I need prior notice." So he calls me up one day. "This is Colonel so-and-so, Argus. I'm coming up." "Okay. A couple hours?" "Yeah, that's just about right." So we jumped in the Jeep and went out and got the schnapps and had two cases, 24 bottles for it. He says, "Where did you get this? I ain't telling you. This is private." He says, "Did you steal it?" "Nope." I says, "I found it, and I'm going to keep it. Nobody's going to know. Lynch me if you want to, but I'm not giving you this." Well, it was a mint. 3,000 bottles at $5 a bottle? That ain't bad money, but I never got rid of it all. Everything went along fine. The sergeant, for Christmas egg, he couldn't give us. We had pork, you know, beef loins, and you cut the T-bones and shortcuts and stuff like that off of you. You never seen that. Processing. "Or what do you want for Christmas?" I said, "I want a short loin." "That's about 20 steaks, T-bones and shortcuts." "No problem." I mean, we had rations. If the captain in the basement, if he'd ever went in that basement, he'd have killed us. But we told him there was a damn snake down there, and I wasn't about to go down there any more than I had to. So anyway, some way, shape, or form, he heard about this liquor. How he did it, I don't know. Ted swore he never told him, because he was making money, too. Every time I'd sell him, I'd give a little rake off to him, 15 or 20 bucks. Hey, he was in his height of glory. So anyway, he calls me in the office, and he says, "Where's this liquor located?" "It's out in the country, or you get you a big truck, and I want every damn bottle in this office by tonight." I said, "We can't carry it by tonight." We pulled a good one. We went and hid some in the forest, but we didn't tell him everything. We don't want a captain being smarter than me. So he says, "Sunday morning, 6 o'clock, you start..." But he hated liquor. He hated liquor. He just loathed this stuff. He says, "Tomorrow morning, Sunday morning at 6 o'clock, you get them two Danes and a couple of Germans and start pouring this stuff down the toilet." "Captain, this is expensive liquor. I don't care. You pour it down the toilet." "Okay." So I got an idea. I went to another outfit that's down the road, and I talked to the sergeant. I said, I got to make a long distance call to Colonel So-and-so. He says, go ahead. So I called for Colonel. He says, Colonel So-and-so. I says, this is Ted Argus from Salina, Colorado. Well, how you doing? Oh, you're not going to be happy when I tell you this. I says, I got a bunch of liquor, and Sunday morning at 6 o'clock, I'm going to pour 2,000 or 3,000, I don't know how many bottles down the sewer. He says, what? Are you drunk? I says, no, sir. I never drink when I'm on duty. Are you kidding me? No, sir, I'm serious. The captain wants it down the sewer at 6 o'clock. Well, he says, it's a little early for me, but I'll be there at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'll bring me a 4x4, and we'll just load that stuff up. So I stalled around about 6:15. Here come that poon flash, and he come in here, and he said, you haven't started yet? Just getting ready, Captain. They're just bringing it upstairs, and I just got the first bottle in my hand, and I told the colonel, don't knock. Here he walks in. What in the hell is going on here? Just pouring this liquor down the toilet. Who in the hell told you to do that? Captain. So anyway, that's enough of that. Cease right now. And he went upstairs, just, you know, and man, he let him have it point blank. He said, what? Do you know how many thousand boys died coming in so you could be here enjoying life? And you're pouring their liquor down the base. Do you know how many soldiers could enjoy a drink out of all this? I'm taking it on. Confiscated in the name of the United States Army. And the captain started arguing. He says, I don't think I'd argue too much, Captain. I might have you on the carpet. And he says, I know a general that would just hate to hear this. So he says, okay, take it.
That's a good story.
Huh?
That's a good story. Now we have to go back to Salina.
Okay.
So when you got out of the Army?
Back to the grocery business. And Dad was getting along in years, and he says, I'm going to take my social...
So you were in the service for 2 or 3 years,
three,
right?
And a half years, roughly. Mm-hmm. So when I came back, I went back in the grocery business, but Safeways was just giving too much competition. We had credit. We had delivery service. Everything was ruining the business. So Dad decided when he was 65 years old, he was going to retire and turn it over to me. And I says, no, I don't want it. We're going to close it up. He says...
Where was this business?
123 Lower F. Mm-hmm. You familiar with Left Street? Mm-hmm. What's the name of that restaurant on there? Bistro?
Yeah, I think so.
On the alley.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Well, it was right across the street. There's a black front, marble front. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of canoes along there. Yeah, Dad was there 50-some years. And so I says, I'll tell you what we'll do. The 15th of December is payday for the railroad. Now, we had a lot of railroad business. When they come in and pay their bill, we just tell them no more credit. So we cashed all the credit in. We were lucky. We had very little in the book, so we got through. Sold the business and everything. So I tried to get a job here. I tried Whitewater. I tried the atomic research out in near, I can't think of the name of that town. Big atomic plant out there in Las Vegas, right out of Las Vegas. I can't remember. I could get in there, so they come in and give me a complete family history and check me out. Traffic tickets. I mean, it was amazing. The questions they asked, personal life. There was 100 of us took the test, and 10 of us passed it. And then Mama says, "I don't want to go to Las Vegas, honey. It's too damn hot." Okay, we'll stay here. So after that, a few days later, I was sitting down at the drugstore, Slide a Drug, where everybody in town met for coffee. And this guy came in, he says, how would you like a job selling cars? Sure, I can sell cars. So he took me over to the boss. The guy, he says, you ought to know you come from an automobile family. Your dad and uncles own that business. I says, I can sell cars. Well, I'll start you out at $350 a month. Hey, that was money from heaven. And he says, in 30 days if you prove yourself, I'll go you $475. Then if another
thing. That was which year?
Huh?
Which year?
1959. So you're refreshing my memory, aren't you? So 1959, went in the office on Monday morning, got all the information he wanted from me for my insurance and stuff, and he says, I've got an old Buick out there, 52 Buick. He says, it's a beautiful car, but I can't sell it. Take that thing to the valley and sell it. So I jump in and I go to the valley and I go over there and stop in a service
station. We're talking about the San Luis Valley?
Yeah. I go in the center and I stopped mucking around and I went to a service station. John Berry Station there, and I introduced myself. And I says, I'm looking for somebody who wants to buy a nice car. I'm just new on the job. He looked it over and he says, the guy just left here and will buy that car. So I went down 9 Mile Road west and down 2 Mile Road south. He always said, under the clump of trees, that's where you find who you're looking for. So anyway, I went down there and I sold him the car. And I called the boss up on the telephone and I said, would you send somebody after me? He says, what's the matter? The car broke down? No, I got cash for it. You sold it? Yeah. You're kidding me. I got the money in my pocket. I don't believe it. Oh, my gosh. Saturday night come. He takes Helen and I and he winds us and dines us. He says, I think this guy's going to make it. He sold that damn car after all the time I had it. First trip to the valley. But I made lots of friends over there. I spoke the language.
You're talking about Spanish?
Spanish. Yeah, I learned it in the grocery business. And they got the wetbacks. We call them mujaos over there. Wetbacks. They hear of me and they come over there after payday on Saturday night. We got $200.
So were they Hispanic people or were they Mexicans?
These are all Mexican wetbacks. Those that come up here to work the fields.
Right.
And then I started doing business with the expression white folks. I went away from the Spanish as much as I could, but they were good people, so I sold them plenty. But then I start expanding my territory. I says, I'm going to go start some of these farmers. They've never bought cars from Chevrolet, very few of them. And I was making a bundle of money over there. One time when Climax was closed up for 6 months, I averaged $2,500 a month commission.
What year was that, when Climax was called?
63, 64, closed. 65. Mm. And I stayed with him for 5 years, and you're looking at the clock, I'm talking too much. I stayed there for 5 years with him, then another guy came in. He put me on a different pay scale. Then I really started selling cars. Then the people from Leadville heard about me and the people from Beauty, and I was an honest salesman. So I worked with them for 5 years. They sold out. One went to Grand Junction, set up a big dealership. The other one went to Casper. They made enough money off of me. They done all right in Casper, Wyoming, and set him up a big dealership. Both of them called me to come and work. But Mama didn't want to move, so what the heck. She had a good job. I had a good job. So I spent till 1971.
Excuse me, when you were saying Mama, you're talking about
your
wife.
I always called her Mama.
What year had you gotten married?
What's that?
Oh, yeah, that's before
that's
you
after.
Went in the service, right?
Yeah, that's after I came home from the service. So I done well in the car business. I my dad couldn't believe it. One time he says, you're going to starve in this business. You're going to starve. One day they had a lot of snow in the valley, and nobody had four-wheel drives, and we were loaded with them pickups. And I was taking them pickups over there like they were just nothing. This guy called me, too. Did you sell Joe Blow a pickup? Yeah, bring me one. That week, that month, I had $3,500 commission. Boss was so proud of me. Oh, he says, I can't believe it. He says, we've never done this kind of business. And another salesman went over there ahead of me. He was doing business with the Mexicans. They were simple, and he could take it, but I wouldn't do it. I would be honest, right on the carpet with them, and they like honesty. The wetbacks, they were so nice to me. I'd go over there on a Saturday, getting off the subject, during potato harvest. Also, they would get paid every Saturday. And they had their bought their trucks on what they call a floor plan. The floor plan, they play once in the fall or twice. They have to make their payments in the fall, maybe $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. So we had to go over there, and I'd get over there, and I'd have 5 or 6, 8, 10 sacks of potatoes. They all brought me potatoes to come home with. I'd bring a pick up load of potatoes home. Give them to all the help down at the garage, you know. It was a wonderful life. Then I got another boss. They sold out, and he was a crook. We argued, and he tried to cheat me, and I was too smart to be cheated.
So what was the name of that business again?
Well, first was Stapleton Chevrolet, then it was Schellebarger Chevrolet, then it was Post Chevrolet.
Mm-hmm. And what was the location?
First Street, down where Fritz's attic is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my uncle's garage, you know where that, I'll get off the subject here, where that fancy store is down, that big garage on First Street, about 2 blocks down, they got all the elk heads and fancy. That used to be my Uncle Dick's garage. They built that up from scratch, the three of them. So anyway, I stayed there until 71 and went into business for myself. I says, this is stupid. I'm going over selling a new car, and I know how much profit is. I can go buy used cars, buy a lease car is all I can, you know, buybacks they call them. They lease them and then sell them to get rid of them. And I was buying buybacks from Pontiac. I made a good friend in Pontiac. I was constantly bringing Pontiacs in here and selling. I did a ferocious business. This was when Climax was running. And all of a sudden, Climax went kaput, and business went kaput.
Mm-hmm. So you had your own location then? You opened your own business? Where was that?
I started on 3rd and F Street where that, what do they call it? There's a little shop there. I think it's a pizza place right on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
They have this yard sale every Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went down next to
the west side.
Huh?
On the west side,
yeah.
Of F Street.
And then I went to next to the Pizza Hut. I had, it was a vacant lot. And I had to rent it because the guy from the Dodson garage got so jealous of me, went to Denver and bought the business, the building that I was renting downtown. So I was out.
So what was the name of your business?
Pids Auto Sales. Who else? But I got good. Mama and him, I got her a good job. It's not interesting, but one day one of her school buddies come in. He was a county commissioner. And he looked disgusted. I said, what's the matter, Teddy? Eddie. I'm Chid. And he says, I need help bad in the office up there, and I can't find an efficient woman. How much does it pay? When he told me, I says, I got a woman for you. So that night, I come home for supper, and I says, I think I got a job for you. I don't want another job. Oh, yes, you do. This pays 5 times what you're making right now to start. And the man's a good friend of yours, and he's going to be at the house at 9 o'clock in the morning to talk to you. Honey, you shouldn't do things like that. You're going to take the job. There's no argument. I insist that you take the job. She became the finance clerk for the courthouse for many years. Efficient as all get out. She always, the CPAs would give her 100%.
Now, this was in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
And you had children?
I had one boy and twin girls.
Mm-hmm. Jim, and that was after they were grown up?
Jim was born in 48, so that would be, I was still in the grocery store then. No, where was I in 48? Carol girls were born in 57.
What are their names?
Sharon and Karen, twins. Pictures are over here on the wall. And I have 4 grandchildren, three girls and a boy. Matter of fact, I just came back from South Dakota to attend this class graduation. He was valedictorian of the class. That made me pretty proud. He was getting... His mother about went nuts up there. She's a good mother, too. Disciplinarian. He was going up there and getting these awards from different outfits, you know, and gosh, he... Just a whistling to beat the devil. That's off the subject, but that's interesting. You're going to learn more about me from Salida that you'll never hear. But anything you want to know about Salida, I'm here. I have things to say that might not come out too good. People talk about Salida today, but they don't know the real Salida. Years ago, we had the railroad. We had trains running from Gunnison, Alamosa, this narrow gauge. We had the passenger trains going and the freight trains going back and forth. We had shops down here. You can't believe the buildings that they had down here in this depot one time. You could probably find a picture someplace. And then climax went to hell. That took about 3,000 people.
Psht. Tell me about that time when climax closed.
Well, it was hard. And I'll only remember the famous words of our illustrious newspaper man.
So, well, maybe we need to specify what Climax is. Climax Mine.
Yeah,
right?
Climax Mining Company, yeah. American molybdenum. Mm-hmm. And, well, they just put 3,000 people out of business. And they were making money. And you know and I know today, there's nobody in Salida makes money except the professional people and the owners of the establishment. The working person doesn't make salary like Walmart and... Did you know at one time, get off the subject again, there was 8 grocery stores in this little town? 8 mom and daddy.
What year was that?
Well, it's when I was in the grocery business, way back when. In the 40s, 50s, there was that many grocery stores. 4 or 5 restaurants downtown. There was pool halls downtown. We had 2 hospitals. We had 5 or 6 big clothing stores. It was a prosperous little community.
And what did you do for entertainment then?
Well, I had more money then than I did. We entertained. We did get to go places. We had some nice, wonderful trips.
And in town, what did you do for amusement?
Well, I used to do a lot of bowling, Ramadan bowling, and I bowled. And we went here and there, went dancing, belonged to the Oaks, belonged to VFW. Participated in a lot of that stuff. Technically, we were both homebodies, so we didn't go that much. But when we wanted to go, we went. If somebody convinced us to go, we went.
There was no. You went on vacations?
Oh, yeah. We've been to Greece. We've been to Hawaii 3 times. Old Mexico 10 or 15 times. As a matter of fact, before she got sick, we had just come back to the, just a minute, Panama Canal. We took the jaunt through the Panama Canal, that 11-day trip on a boat. Oh, gosh, that's something you should never miss. If you ever have the shekels, you should take that trip. That's the thrill of a lifetime. I mean it. That's the 8th wonder of the world. We got 7. And then, of course, when we got back, 6 months later, she got leukemia and passed away.
What year was that?
Huh?
What year?
5 years. 2.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So back to Salida in the 40s or 50s. You said there were so many grocery stores and a lot going on. What did people do in...
They worked on the railroad. On payday, there's the 15th and 30th of the month. You could go down this bridge here. Or down on the lower end of C Street, there was another footbridge, they called it, that went across the river. And you'd watch them come across here, and they'd come just in swarms, going into the stores, paying their bills, buying groceries. It was money. It was money. You don't have the money in Salida.
And where did these people come from? Were they long-time Salida
residents? Oh, yeah, the railroad has been here a long time. The miners were here. We had the big Monarch Quarry up there. They mined the floor spar for Pueblo steel mills down in Pueblo. They used that stuff to harden steel. We had 3 or 4 small mines, good working mines. It was prosperous. Anybody you ask my age will tell you the same thing. That was prosperity in them days. Everybody had money. Today they don't have nothing. These poor, I tell you, Turner, I feel sorry for these young kids coming in here and trying to make a living. They just don't make that kind of money. They have to come in here and get all upset about it, you know, and pretty soon they're gone again. You can't live on $7 an hour unless your husband's making 30. Is he? 20?
So, it was a good life then. So you really feel that now for the people who want to make a living, it's bad here.
There's no income. Mm-hmm. $7 an hour, $5 an hour. Some guy offered me the job the other day to go to work for him part-time for $5 an hour. And I said, I draw more than that in Social Security. There is no, you know it, if you know the welfare of Salida. I mean, the artisans, I don't know how they make it. I don't know, they sell it.
When did the artists start coming?
What's that?
When did the artists start coming here?
Artists? Mm-hmm. Artisans?
Yeah.
About 8, 10 years now. And then they started this steam plant that got all involved, you know. But how many people enjoy that? 200 a year? I mean, a night? It's a certain type of entertainment for a certain type of people.
Talking about steam plant, was there that kind of thing in the early days in Salida?
It was an old public service place where they...
Yeah, no, but I mean, was there theater and concerts,
we had two theaters in Salida. With Salida Theater and Isis Theater.
Were they movie theaters or a stage?
Yeah.
Was there any stage? No. Were there concerts?
Well, years ago they had a big pavilion down here in the park. They had band concerts every week. There was a band here, mm-hmm. a bunch of old men.
What kind of music was it?
Cuddly music. The good old-fashioned music, not... Of course, we haven't had them for 30 years, so. Well, in my day, I've seen a heck of a change. And as far as I'm concerned, and I can get to anybody my age that's still around, they feel the same way. It's just not the town it used to be. And people, I don't know how you find, of course, you're... people aren't like they used to be. They're not sociable. I got a guy across the street, he's been here 4 years now, he's never said hello to me, I don't think. He just don't want to be bothered. You want to tell your story about that?
Sure.
You get a kick out of it. About 5 years ago, we had a big snow, about 12, 13 inches, and there was a couple come in from Texas, and they were building a house up on, what's that development up there?
Pinion Hills?
No, way out.
Butte?
Antero?
Miss Antero?
Yeah. And they rented this house. Well, old Big Mouth, I was going to go meet him, and my wife says, you've had nothing but problem with strangers. Forget them. So for 3 days and three nights, there wasn't no footprints on the side. There was no footprints leading out of the house. No footprints on the porch, and I got worried. Well, the third day, I said, to hell with it. I'm going over there. So I went over there, knocked on the door, and she says, what do you want? Well, I says, ma'am, I was worried about your welfare. I hadn't seen any sign of life here. And I said, they used to have a lot of trouble with the gas furnace here, and I thought maybe you were asphyxiated or something. No, we're fine, thank you. Slammed the door in my face. Real appreciative. So Monday night... Monday night, my wife goes to the sorority. So who's one of the guests of honor? The gold bag from across the street. Well, Hellymore, how do you like your neighborhood you're living in? Oh, it's a nice neighborhood. People don't bother me. I've got a nosy old neighbor over there. He just drives me crazy. And she's stretching the truth. And my wife is sitting in the audience. So she says... Well, this man come over there, knocked on the door, right through the snow and everything, and blah, 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 one on and on. After she got through, my wife was the Irish come out. She stood up and she says, ma'am, I just want to tell you, I am the wife of that nosy neighbor. He was worried about your welfare. He thought something might have happened because he used to take care of that house and they had trouble with the stove, the heater. But she says, I'll promise you this. If that house burns down and you're standing on the porch to get rescued, he ain't coming over to help you. She told her off. Them women said they roared that night after. Boy, she had never seen Helen get so mad in her life. She blew her top. That's neighbors. They don't want to be bothered.
So you feel that's like that in general? I mean, that all people...
No.
These days
No. I've met people that have been good friends of mine for years. I like to, in the neighborhood, I always go meet them. If they want to be friends, fine. If they don't, I lived 83 years with
her. But it definitely was different when you were growing up.
Oh, I think everybody was sociable in them days. We were more compact. Everybody knew everybody. You go down to the store, tell you the truth, I'll go back.
Why do you think, I mean, the population numbers haven't changed. So
the population's got to be about 6,000.
Yeah, but 100 years ago it was 5,000.
5,200?
Mm-hmm. So what do you think caused the difference here?
It's a difference of type of people we're getting in there. Money people. Some of them are nice and some of them are devils, that's all. You run into that. You know people. Hollymore. You know all these people. You got a nice neighbor up there. What's his name? Ron? There's a prince.
He is.
Yeah. He told me he's going to send a good-looking blonde down here to see me. I got shaved 2 days in a row, and I said, she ain't coming to hell with her. But, no, I think in them days, you go to Walmart, you don't know anybody. You go here, you go to supper and eat, you don't know anybody. Of course, there's cliques. Everybody, you probably got some groups that you associate with that, you know, maybe, I don't know. Maybe you don't get along with people. I don't know. You look tough anyway. So anyway, I think it's a great change. For me, it's not to the best for Salida. And I don't think they're doing a thing to improve this town. They keep saying we're going to get industry. Where are you going to put industry? Common knowledge. Where can you put industry? With payroll, I'm talking about. Everybody gets excited. This place is coming in and going to start another restaurant. So they get $6 an hour. Big deal. And they work 30 hours a week, most of them, because they don't want to go 40-hour weeks.
So you said that your wife wasn't interested in moving out of the area.
Oh, no. She loved it here. And after she
Why did she love it?
I think we just settled here. We've been here all our life.
How long have you lived in this house?
Where?
Here, this house.
This house? Mm-hmm. 53 years, 54. I can't remember. We bought it. Oh, hell no. What's the 48? My son was born. How many years would that be? 56? 48 and 56? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And that was another incident that just tears me apart. We were renting an apartment, and we had a landlady. She was a drunk. And she had a boyfriend who was a prominent dentist. And they were throwing parties all the time over there, raising hell every night. You know, the walls have ears. And one night we had some kids over to play cards, canasta, a fancy game. And we played canasta. That morning she got up and said, you're going to have to quit making so damn much noise. The party broke up at 11 o'clock. I don't care. Oh, she was mean. She says, I think you better go find another place. And it was a barn anyway. I says, okay. So I went down and talked to Uncle Gus. And I says, Uncle Gus, I got a bad problem. He says, what's the matter? I got to find a house to buy in a hurry. He says, boy, are you lucky. He never said goddamn. I'm just using the expression. He said, goddamn. Ah, goddamn. Never said that. Never swore. He says, Faye was just here and she wants to sell that house up on G Street. I knew the house. This used to be a mayor's house years ago. Mayor Claude Furnell. So anyway, I got a hold of her. And she went up to the house, Uncle Gus and I. And I said, what do you want for it? She told me. That's another thing I'll talk about. And she told me how much she wanted for it, and I says, well, could I give you a check to hold it till I can get the bank Monday? Sure, that's fine. That's fine. So I give her a check for $500. She calls me Sunday, and I says, she says, I'm going to have to bank out of the deal. My heart went bang like that. I says, why? She says, because I've got a better offer. I says, well, bring me my check back. She says, oh, I cashed the check. Well, I says, then you're bound by law. And her son was an attorney. She didn't believe me. I just called your boy up, Bud. So she called back. She says, well, I guess I fouled myself up, didn't I? I says, yes, you did. And I says, you ain't going to get me out of here. If you give me $10,000, I'm not going to move. I wasn't in, but I was getting ready. Oh, she was mad. Oh. Of course, this house wasn't this way. It was a barn, too. Guess what this house sold for back in about 50? Did you buy that house up there? Oh, no, that was built later. For your living. Mm-hmm. How long you been there?
Well, we're talking about your house. So
no, I'm just
tell me about your house.
$5,250.
That was in the 50s. Yeah. 56, you said, right?
Yeah. But look what the price of this property. Mm-hmm. The house I'm telling you, the old crank lived in there. I could have bought it for $39,000 not long ago. This one right over here, the brick one, I could have bought it for $39,000.
Would that have been in the 80s?
10 years.
90s?
Yeah. And my wife wouldn't let me buy it, and it sold for 80-some thousand right after she backed me out of it. The guy got antsy and raised the price and sold it for $80,000. Ridiculous in this town. It's absolutely stupid. You could go to Pueblo and buy a new house for less money than that. Brand new one.
But it's not Salida.
Hmm?
It's not Salida.
No, what's Salida got?
Yeah, you tell me. You love it here.
As far as I'm concerned, I don't think they got a lot. They got Halleborg and Ted and what else? They don't have any lot. What do we have? We have hot days and cold days, hot nights and warm nights. What else?
But you like it here, right?
I'd like to see it go back where it was years ago, but it ain't going to happen. Mm-hmm. You don't. It's hard for you to imagine not being here, but when I was growing up, there was so many people running up and down. Quit looking at that clock. It's fast anyway, isn't it? 5 o'clock. What time does your husband eat when he gets home?
Don't worry about that. I'm just thinking about the tape.
No, I don't think Salida's changed for the best. I don't know. I just don't know how to explain it. Money is what's ruined it. You know, there's so much money running around loose anymore that everybody wants this and everybody wants that, and pretty soon we got everything and we're all in debt again. Are you in debt?
No.
You own your home?
Okay, let's talk about you.
Talk about my past. I can't get no information out of you.
Later.
Später. Okay, what do you want to know?
You said this was the mayor's house. How do we spell his name?
Claude Furno. Claude Furno.
Okay. All right, well, we're kind of close to the end of the tape, so is there anything else you want to say?
What do you want to ask me?
I can't think of anything now.
You mean you run out of questions?
Oh, I probably can find a few, but maybe you have to say something.
I got answers. You got questions? What's that program? You got questions? I got answers?
Well, then I would like to thank you very much for your interview.
That's all you want to know? That's only an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's our time.
Do you think you'd be able to get an article out of that? You'd probably throw it in the trash.
No, I don't think so. So, anything else?
Alles, das ist alles. Das ist genug.
Okay.